Hi, everyone. I'm Shannon Bodie, and thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Love in the Mirror. This week, our guest, Matt Bingham, my friend, an amazing musician and yoga teacher, is with us to talk about music, healing, some of his journey, and of course, things that we can all learn together as we find ways for music that works for us. So thanks for being here. This is the Love in the Mirror podcast. All right, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you. Again, I'm Shannon Bodie. And today we get to talk about music. So I don't know about you all, but when I was thinking about podcast topics and what our dear listeners need to hear and what I need to practice, music is a really big part of changing my personal mind state, whether I need to amp up, amp down, get centered. And our guest today, I cannot think of a better person to speak to. Plus, he's really just a delight to talk to, and I respect so much of his journey. This is Matt Bingham joining us, and he's a musician and yoga teacher from Arizona. His two main focuses, musically, have been one that's anchored in the singer-songwriter genre, that's really driven by beautiful acoustic guitar and very emotionally expressive lyrics. And the other focus of his is lush, calm, layered sound that you find in his instrumental pieces, both on his own solo and in The Light Meeting. This is his cello and guitar duo. And oh my gosh, I've taught yoga classes with Matt and The Light Meeting playing, and it is a magical experience. He has a passion for both stillness and movement in yoga. And for those of us who aren't yoga practitioners, this is still going to translate really well for you today because he really takes this to a level of how we can practice mindfulness with music. So looking at how he weaves his own live music, as well as intentionally picking music of other artists to accompany both his yin or slow, soothing, and vinyasa or uplifting and very fast-paced yoga classes. This is really what makes his classes unique and his take on music. So where can you find him? The Light Meeting's music has been a main feature on the Insight Timer meditation app, and it's been featured in Jillian Pransky's playlist. She's an internationally known yoga teacher, and he's played for yoga studios, retreat centers, including Kripalu in Massachusetts. So I've talked enough about Matt. Matt, thank you for joining us. And I want to just thank you, because you and I have gotten to hang out in yoga circles, and I've gotten to enjoy your music for quite some time. So it's such a great, great opportunity to chat with you. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Well, thanks so much for having me.
Hey. So I know we covered a lot just even in your intro, and I'd just love to hear from you and for people to hear from you. If you can share your background with music and whatever else you consider to be the healing arts, what got you into yoga? What got you into music as practices together?
Sure. So with music, I grew up listening to basically, you know, what my parents were listening to, which was, my dad was a big fan of classic rock. My mom was a big fan of kind of singer-songwriter, kind of softer rock music from the 60s and 70s. And so I definitely was influenced by both of those. But I think at the age, you know, I always loved music, I think from the time I was a really little kid. But I wanted to start learning guitar when I was 8 or 9. So I remember my parents getting me a guitar for Christmas. I just wanted to learn how to rock, you know, like Angus Young from AC/DC and Van Halen. Yes. Those bands was really what I was drawn to. And I still love those bands. But I think I always wanted to find a singer. So I took some lessons and also was self-taught for a little while on guitar. And when I was in high school, I was looking for a singer, but I just never found anyone that I connected with and that wanted to do the same kind of style of music. And so from there, just decided to take my voice more seriously and just see what it could do. And for me, I knew singing as, you know, you either have it or you don't. And I think for me, it was kind of somewhere in between, like I can do it, but my range was really short. And so I just didn't see myself as a lead singer at all. And, but as soon as I started taking some lessons, and just, it was like a slow progression for me, but I remember just hearing certain songs and just being really moved by certain pieces of music. And one was Sting's Fields of Gold, which still is one of my favorite songs. Yes. Amos Lee, a friend of mine in high school, Keep It Loose, Keep It Tight is the name of the song.
Nice.
And I was just like, man, it just sounds so great to just have an acoustic guitar sound with just vocals. I mean, what you can do with such a simple thing. But it took me a while, I think, to get comfortable with playing guitar and singing. And I think especially coming from playing a lot more riff heavy music and then learning how to finger pick, and which now, of course, is like my whole jam. Like, I love that. But yeah, you know, I remember talking to my mom too, just about James Taylor and artists that she grew up listening to. So that was a nice way for us to connect and be like, oh, you know, I'm much more, you know, as a 17-year-old at the time, I was like, I'm much more into the light music now. And I wanted to follow in that kind of path. So, cause I think my voice just wasn't really geared for rock music. And I guess if I really wanted to do it, I could have probably learned to sing that way. But for me, it was more just, yeah, let's just, and for me, I mean, as you know, when we've talked about it, when we were, hanging out during the teacher training, and, it just emotionally expressive lyrics. Like, I think I started to cue into like what really moves me, in a song. And I think as cool as some really hard rock kind of music can be, it can fit a certain mood and can really get you going and energized. But songs like Fields of Gold or Fire and Rain from James Taylor, for me, it was like, oh, this song will live forever. This is amazing. So I wanted to write songs that were expressive of the way that I felt. And for me, the more that I do it, you know, just the more that I've kept doing it, to me, it's been such a, like you mentioned, healing. To me, it's a pretty, cathartic practice, because if I'm not sure about a situation, or if I'm feeling a certain way, even if I'm feeling happy, but especially if I'm feeling more the negative emotions, like if I'm feeling kind of angry about something or upset, for me, writing about that in a song really helps process those things for me. And getting to work with kids too, and seeing them become songwriters and process that, like, they don't know how profound that is. So I think for me, it's maybe it value that even more. So but yeah, as far as that, so that's kind of the music focus. And then, I think with yoga, when I first got into yoga, I think I was attracted more to the intense, like, Ashtanga kind of practice, which I think you were, I don't know if you started that way too, but I think we had talked about that.
I had my peak of Ashtanga, and for those outside of the yoga world, that's very intense. And, I'd say the peak of intensity, and just this yogi's opinion, very intense, very clearing, but that also, you know, likened to the AC/DC rock of the yoga world in terms of intensity.
Right, right. Yeah. I guess I would compare it that. Yeah, totally. Like, it's the heavy metal maybe in a way, right? But then again, I'm sure someone, you know, will have a different opinion on that. And I don't mean anything negative by that.
Oh, but not at all. That's the beauty of it. Yeah, I love it too. Right. There are times and places. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for me, you know, I was attracted to that, but I even teach vinyasa classes now, which are of course influenced by the Ashtanga yoga practice. But to me, doing restorative yoga and yin yoga and slow flow yoga, and really just going to teachers' classes that just really seem to embody like the practice, like you can tell they've done a lot of work on themselves and just are very mindful and accepting of everyone who's in the room. It's not really ego focused, as little as it can be. And I think I've just been influenced by a lot of those teachers, and a lot of teachers have been really encouraging to me to put my own music in my classes. So when I first started, and I think you were one of those for sure.
Absolutely. I can't imagine your yoga without
right?
music now.
Right. You know? And I did the teacher training. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember playing some songs, and you just were so great and supportive of that. And so when I started teaching, I thought, well, at least for Shavasana, right, I'm going to play a softer song. And just for my own yoga practice, I've written a lot of songs, not necessarily geared for yoga classes. The light meeting stuff is, the instrumental stuff kind of is geared for that. Thanks. But the more singer songwriter kind of stuff is not necessarily like written for that, but it I think from having a softer yoga practice, to me, has definitely influenced my songwriting. So
Well, and I love the parallels in your journey that you reflect. And, you know, when I step back and think for people who are listening, like that you started both with music and with yoga, like those little bit, you were attracted to the more intense, you know, which are also beautiful and meditative in their own ways. I mean, yeah. I know folks who will argue that they can meditate and get more calm listening to Guns N' Roses and AC/DC than
and
meditation
and Fields
music,
of Gold
right?
just drives them nuts.
Yeah. So it all depends on what our vibration is, what we need, what matches your brainwave. Yeah. But, you know, so that's, those are subjective terms that we add our own experience to it. But for you, it was like you were drawn to those and they grabbed your attention. They got you into the medium, you know, both yoga and songwriting and developing your voice. And that for you and your, as you learned and got deeper, you preferred the more contemplative, what I say, and slower practices. And something that we didn't include in your intro too is that, you know, your rich history as a student of music, taking that growth mindset opportunity, by the way, to become your own lead singer, which is fabulous. I love that, you know, nature abhors a vacuum and you filled it. Like, oh, I'm going to learn to sing then. And it's going to take some time, but I'm going to increase my range. But that you also teach, you teach kiddos. And would you like to speak to that a little bit and your parallels, how you see music touching their lives?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, there's so many great things working with kids. And one of my favorite things is seeing, you know, I think when you're a kid yourself, you don't really see the value of certain things that you're doing, of course, right? And I think teaching certain kids and seeing them be excited about music, and even if they don't have it naturally, them starting to make some progress and get a better sense of rhythm and pitch. And not that it's just about getting better at that, but just seeing that they have a healthy tool as an outlet.
Yeah.
You know, to have for their life, you know? And I just think if I didn't have that, I don't know where I'd be right now. You know, to me, it's just such a cool, positive thing. And it's really showed me, it's like, you know, I have certain kids that I kind of see myself in them in some ways, like, you know, they kind of remind me of me and they'll be doubting something or really in their head about something, or, you know, this is a really big deal. And it's so cool to be like, why don't you turn that into a song? And they'll be like, And they kind of see it as separate, you know, like, well, no, this is this life situation. I want to be playing guitar and it's not, you know, I can't do both. And I'm like, you can actually channel this frustrating situation into that. And you just see them, you make their own statements, you know, with their own songs. Mm. And so we do a songwriting project in my class and I've been doing that every year.
Great.
Yeah. And it's just so fun to see what each kid comes up with. And because we all see the world slightly differently or vastly differently. So that kind of comes out in songs, but yeah, overall it's really great. And, you just see the impact that you have teaching, especially someone I teach middle school. So it's 10 to like 14 year olds and, overall seeing the positive, I guess just the overall impact and the relationship that I build with them. It's just really cool. And it's affirming for all this kind of stuff. And it's cool to kind of bring in yoga concepts of movement and just taking moments to pause and breathe. And if things are not going well. And so those things are, you know, with music included, I think you just kind of see like, oh, this is like bigger than me, you know, this whole process is, there's something really cool and universal about this. So
And I just love, I know we've talked about this, that, you know, I think there's a special place in the universe for people drawn to middle school, to working with middle school kiddos. And because it's one of those things that I don't know, all my client work over the years, I would say there's a terrified middle school child inside of every single one of us, no matter how well adjusted we are. And often when we're doing our own work or we're dealing with a coping pattern, if it's useful, not useful, if we're challenged and, you know, we're feeling we're not in our most skillful day, it's like, oh, go back to the needs of that junior high, that inner junior high little person who are probably younger, and that everybody needs that encouragement for creativity. Like you don't know what's a beautiful song or a poem or something that could get channeled in you that comes out of the grit of surviving this pain. Right. Whatever it is.
Right.
So how awesome to be doing it with them in real time.
Yeah.
When they really need it, you know?
Yeah. And it's a journey that I'm taking with them too, you know, and for myself, I feel like I learn a lot from them too, which is super cool.
That's I feel compelled to ask, like, what are some of the things that they're teaching you?
I think there's moments where I was thinking about this recently, like, what, you know, what are some of the biggest lessons? And I think when you are in school as a kid versus an adult, you know, there's someone kind of telling you what to do, like, this is your schedule. And yeah. I think there's a lot of freedom in that to then kind of react in the moment and take care of yourself. And I think they're much more honest with, hey, I need this right now. Like, I'm not feeling 100%. And I think for me too, because I want to do a good job, some days I'll show up and be like, you know, this is my plan. I want to do well. I'm not feeling 100%, but I'm just going to still do the best I can. But sometimes I will not totally be present with myself enough to slow down. And I think them just ebbing and flowing with the day, but also the seasons. And I think being in January right now, naturally there's just less energy happening, and that's okay. And yes. I try to kind of almost in a Ayurvedic kind of sense, do a balance kind of thing where it's, we're not going to get the most stuff done usually around this time of year. So let's just take a moment to do some projects where we're still learning, but let's make it creative and fun and unique. And I do have the freedom to do that. So that's also nice, at the school that I work at. So yeah, I'd say that's the biggest thing. And I'm just inspired by that. And I think just, you know, sometimes the older you get, I guess it depends on the person. So it's a general statement to say that, but, you know, you feel like you have to fit a mold, right? You have to be this and you have to be that. And, we all have jobs and these things that we feel like we have to take care of. And I think they're more in a mode of, they are who they are, and they haven't been, middle school is a time too, where they are changing. So you do see that change of dressing differently, acting differently to fit in. And, but I think there's also the other side of, they have so many naturally, gifted things. That's just, their personality is just so cool and is so present at that age. And I just really try to encourage them too, to like, keep that, you know, that is really awesome. And that comes out in their playing too, in their songwriting, and the way that they play, which is really cool to see.
It's like very more authentic. There's less time spent in roles, perhaps.
Yeah. So yeah, I think authentic,
it doesn't
is
take
a good
them
word,
as long to get back to themselves, right?
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Oh my gosh. How fun. And raw. And
yeah.
But it's this available material that they can tap into, which I love that. I love that age group too. So
yeah. And how
for
old
all those
is,
reasons.
How old is Zoe now?
Yeah. So my daughter's 10. Okay. And so she's ramping up, getting ready. Okay. And, you know, and we have a lot of that age group in our family. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those like, oh, honey, I got you, where there's just emotion and hormone and identity development that's happening so much faster than they don't even have words for, you know, and it's like, it's all right here. So all the more reason to let's have some tools. And music is really big in our house for that reason. Like, okay, because it's the number one game changer, right?
That's cool.
Where we can... Yeah. Like I could yoga preach all the live long day. That doesn't go over very well. You know? But I can put on a song when she's had a bad day at school, and it's probably not going to be some chanting, but it might be some Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. And then we can get on down to it, you know, to some relaxing, but that dance it out, meet her where she is first.
Yeah.
Really. And, you know, making dorky faces and dancing and being stupid, because in our house, none of us are songwriters yet anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
But I wouldn't be surprised if she turns out to be, because she's got some powerful poetry in her, that one. But
that's really cool.
It's fun. But that's how, I mean, we use music to first meet us, you know, that move your body, change your mind, even if it's for 3 minutes. And then we can calm down and kind of get to whatever's really, really hard, right? Mm-hmm. So you and I have also talked about that, about, you know, you talked using music as a real shift to get to those quieter places. And for people who are looking for some tips, perhaps, or some guidance, what would you suggest, you know, to get into maybe a more mindful place, more meditative place, like use music as tool, including some of the yoga things that you include in your own practice or that you teach?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are you thinking maybe suggestions as far as what would be good examples to listen to?
Or I guess just how it's worked for you, you know, like in your own, might be to listen to, or how you use music to help yourself slow down and get mindful.
And for me, I think I've always had that since I was a kid. I think I would hear pieces of music and I would be really moved by them. But also, you know, some of my friends at the time would be like, I don't get what you hear, you know, in this piece of music, you know.
So and, subjective, right?
So exactly, yeah. But I do think, especially after working with lots of kids and lots of different personality types, I think everyone's got their taste in music. And so one song for me may make me feel calm and relaxed. And I'm on that note with that song, Fields of Gold, one of my friends in high school said, song really just gives me insomnia. Like it's just so, I just don't like it. You know, I can't sleep to it. And I just found that ironic because I thought this is the most beautiful song that relaxes.
This is my go-to.
Yeah. So I think I don't just tuning into what you need. And I think an example that we talked about recently was I was on my way to work one day to teach guitar to these kids. And I remember listening to like a really somber, really introspective kind of album because I had been meaning to listen to it. And I was already in that kind of mood. And it was just kind of pulling me into this really like too introspective. Like, I'm going to go and hang out with kids and this is not the energy that that I need right now. And I realized it because I used to be kind of stubborn about that. Like, no, I told myself I was going to listen to it. I got to finish this album right now. But I think recently and I just stopped listening to it. And I thought, you know, it's actually going to like kind of a darker mental space, you know, where if I do walk into a room of kids, it's like that's not what they need. They need more of a really present, active energy. And so I was thinking about what I really wanted to listen to. And I think something that's interesting too is that I still am opinionated on music, but much less so than I used to be. And I think there are certain bands that I'm just like, I can't. You know, it's too pop for me, or it's too this or too that. And I was probably a little bit more judgmental about myself listening to some bands. And actually the band that I was going to mention that I threw on. So I put on Third Eye Blind and, I've been kind of running to their music recently too. And it's just fun. Like a lot of it's just energizing. And to me, it's just like, it's okay. Not every music has to be these really introspective, really meaningful lyrics, and they are meaningful, but it's just meaningful probably in a different way. And so I've been embracing that a lot more, but it was interesting to see my own kind of thought pattern. And as soon as I, you know, in the car, I put on a Third Eye Blind album, and I just remember thinking like, yeah, now I'm like more lighthearted, much more in the zone to go into work. And so to me, that was just a nice shift of, I need something to listen to just kind of shift my energy in it. And it worked really well. And
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, and it worked well because what I heard too, I so have this journey of my own. There were things that my brother and I used to admit to each other that we were listening to. Uh-huh. Like, it's not cool to be listening to this, but I need to tell you, you know, but I really like it.
And it's so funny. I don't know why we do that.
It's great. You know? Right? Yeah. This whole identity thing that we have with what we grew up with or what's cool or what's acceptable or what's within our culture in any way we want to look at that. It's hilarious, I think, to look back over that. But what I heard too in your example, Third Eye Blind, love them, by the way, but that you weren't judging yourself for listening to it. So the shift could also happen quicker.
You
weren't
exactly
getting over yourself with this, God, I can't believe I'm listening to this, but whatever, it's working.
Yeah.
You know, it worked for you. It was a tool.
Because
there wasn't judgment, which is fun. Maybe not because of it, but it might help.
Right. And I think that goes back to, you know, I don't know. It's partially maybe just as I get a little bit older, that's probably part of it. But at the same time, I also think having a softer yoga practice really time and time again, I think just has an impact to where I just don't take things as seriously as often. And I think I tend towards that. I take things seriously, which I think is not a bad thing. It can be very helpful to
all.
Me and to accomplish things that I want to accomplish. And but then it just sometimes feels like there's a tipping point to where it's like, okay, so this is a little bit too, like, I'm taking this too seriously. And I think when I was talking about Ashtanga earlier, I think that was kind of feeding that when I was practicing that. And then when I started restorative yoga and yin yoga and just doing those practices just at home before I was sleeping, kind of consistently doing that before and going to bed. And after some time, like, just, you know, this just feels like I'm okay. You know, I'm okay as I am. And there is that element that is striving, kind of more the yang energy. But then there's also the other energy that's just, you know, I'm okay. I did my best, and let's leave it at that. But sometimes you need to practice to tell your nervous system that, you know, it's easier said than done. You can't always logic your way into that. But
as hard as we try, as you may know. Right? I've heard something about this. I may have to teach and preach this so that I remember it every day.
Right. Yeah, you may have experienced that.
Maybe a little, which I love. Well, you've referenced a few rhythm examples too in many ways. And I love that. Like, where there are times and places where maybe it is a more austere practice or might be perceived as rigid, but it has its place, right? Mm-hmm. You know, something that's, and it could be if it's not Ashtanga yoga, you know, recently this year, for me, I've been kind of breaching into some weightlifting workouts or things like that look a little more CrossFit-esque and realizing with any practice, you know, that when it starts to, when I start to become hard on myself, that's my sign to take a step back. So is this ritual, is this, you know, rigid structure, which is supposed to help me get clear, do I feel like I'm a slave to this? Am I hard on myself if I don't follow it? Then that's usually my sign to step back and go more gentle and find a rhythm that is a little more, invite some deeper self-compassion. And that's just what I hear in your journey too, that you referenced a couple of things, both that spanda or back and forth with the more gentle practice, gentle music, but also you referenced Ayurvedic rhythms and time of year. And that's a bigger question, but I wonder if you'd like to speak to that a little bit and just the rhythm of how maybe it's how music, yoga, both in times of year, you know, might impact you and might impact our listeners so that there's some permission for that normalcy in those cycles to show up for us.
Yeah. So, you know, from my experience, I just love how things connect and thinking about Ayurveda in the sense of like food, seasons, even moment to moment, how things kind of fluctuate throughout the day. I notice, you know, in the mornings teaching classes, there's more energy, there's more focus there. And then in the afternoon, that's tends to drop. So in terms of teaching, it's hard not to put the same expectation on, well, I taught these two classes in the morning and I tried to do the same thing in the afternoon, but it wasn't landing the same way. You know, why was it not landing? So I think having that, just, I don't know, introspection to go, okay, you know, what adjustments do I need to make? And then seeing, and that's, I think one of the cool things about teaching is you can always get better at things and you can always, learn how to connect with whoever you're teaching in different ways. And I'm always fascinated by that. I think just because from teaching guitar and also teaching yoga, I've seen those things. It can be frustrating, you know, you're like, God, I'm doing the same thing, but it's just not working. But I think paying attention to those times, like, you know, one's a morning hour, one's an afternoon hour, and they are going to feel different. And depending on the group that you have, that's going to feel different with that dynamic. But also seasonally, I think it's hard after the holidays, I think, to not feel like, okay, we got to get back to it and we're back to work and we had this break. And I think I approached it like that for a while. And then I noticed for myself, like I needed kind of a progression of an energy lift. I didn't need to go straight back into doing something that was really challenging, from the beginning. So I think the same thing with working with these students that are, kind of feeling the same thing, you know, like, okay, we don't need to like, okay, we're going to go right back to it and learn these things. And maybe it does work, you know, for some people, but for me, it's just like, we're just going to recap what we learned last semester and then kind of segue into a creative, fun project that kind of fits more of the energy that's going on right now. And it's that, you know, the days are shorter, you know, so there's just less sunlight and everything just feels less alive overall. And I think people's energy reflect that. So as best as I can, you know, trying to tune into that, teaching kids guitar, but also yoga too. And, you know, moon salutations. I remember talking to you about this, like sun salutations, you do so much in a lot of yoga classes, but I've been doing a lot of moon salutations, and I think that's a nice way to kind of bring some energy back to like, okay, we're more in more a yin kind of time of year. And I think this is a practice that we can do to kind of tap into that, to kind of honor that, which is fun. And also I think being a male yoga teacher, I don't really see a lot of male yoga teachers kind of doing moon salutations. So for me, I think it's just a cool way to bring that in and be like, you know, cause there's the masculine and the feminine and all of us and to honor that and to do that, I just think is a really cool sequence, you know?
Yes. And to, as you said, to honor the energy that it is with it, that's within every single one of us, the active doing versus the quiet receiving, and honoring the energy of the year and the cycle where we all are in the year, where we can, right? Like there are going to be rhythms out of our control, but what I love about your teaching, both music and yoga, is now where we can, let's role model this. Let's, even if it is an expectation of a higher paced class, but let's take it to still that harness the introspective energy that also is this time of year, you know, in between that winter solstice and spring equinox cycle, especially, you know, so that it, and then we resist less. I don't know about you, but I find that when I meet that natural rhythm, I'm easier on myself and my clients are easier on themselves. We can be like, oh, this is normal.
Right.
It's okay.
Right.
It's a little low energy. Yeah. But what I love too, you said that you used to have some, you said stubbornness. I love that. Like, no, well, I'm going to get through this. But then you also said, I'm not going to, I'm going to make myself, it's on my list.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the things and that there's also a, oh, wait, I don't have to set up camp here.
Yeah.
I can shift. I can, you know, use this to lift up and out. And as you said, you talked about that too, to not go too introspective or not go too amped. How do you know? What's your personal, or what do you see in your students or those guidelines where you're like, oh, this might be too deep. And this could apply to people who are also doing some of their own interpersonal work. And I said, there's a little bit of a threshold where, ooh, you don't want to go too deep, maybe because you don't feel quite safe or it's just not the time. You don't have the time or energy to attend to it the way you need.
Yeah.
So what are some of the ways that you catch that in your awareness and either through music, yoga, other practices, sort of bring yourself up to meet the day as you need to, and with awareness, of course, but also moving forward.
Yeah. Well, I think just having a yoga practice in general for me has taught me a lot about myself. And I do notice with myself that I do tend towards being more introspective, and I think I'm just more introverted in a lot of ways. And while that lends itself to a lot of good things, when I'm going to go do things that need more of an extroverted energy, it has not served me as well as I would have hoped. So I think, you know, being in front of people, and you want to be clear, you want to be engaging with people, you know, you just don't want to be in your head. And I think there could be so many reasons why that's happening. And there's things in my life where I've just been like fascinated by like why I'm that way. You know, it could just be a, I don't know, a genetic thing. But even like my brother and I are very different that way. And So for me, kind of looking about or looking at shifting out of that energy when I need to, I think just knowing when I'm starting to go too far that way and recognizing like moment to moment, like when I was going to teach and I was listening to that really kind of darker introspective album, I was noticing, okay, I'm starting to kind of spiral down into this. This is not productive for me.
Yeah.
And to bring myself out, it could be a simple change. And even like moving your body, like even like talking with people, I'll notice, I'll have a conversation where it seems tense and I'll hear it even in my speech. I'm not really pronouncing things clearly. And even like moving my body, it almost like moves that energy in a way, And I think that's just really cool to look at. And the same thing with music. It's like, you know, this isn't serving me. I literally just hit stop, you know, soon after I recognize that and then put something else on, and then it just seeing it shift. And then also putting the power back in your hands. Cause if you realize it's up to you to realize that, you know, no one else is going to tell you, oh, maybe they would, I guess maybe, hey, you know, someone would say, Matt, you're getting too off the deep end with this introspective thing, you know? And someone maybe would say that. But I think it's really up to me, because my students aren't going to tell that to me. So I'm the one that has to be like, if I'm going to be really present and really serving the best version of myself and working towards that to ultimately serve whoever else I come in contact with, you know, in the next day, then it's, I'm going to have to shift some of this. So yeah, I think just, I don't know, for other people listening, maybe having some kind of practice that just makes you aware, like, okay, this is not... Even if you're having a hard conversation and you need to pause that and come back to it later, knowing when to do that is, I think, is helpful.
That timing, that to catch it, it's like the art of the pause, you know, to catch it and perhaps give yourself permission to go back to it later, or to, you know, that I love that you said that's gold. Like, oh, we always have it in our power to take it back to. You know, to seize the moment, to change our mood, to move our body. Yeah. And it doesn't feel like that when we go super far down the rabbit hole sometimes. Right. I don't know about you, but it's like, I forget. Yeah. Like, no, that's, you know, those sometimes those feelings of really deep, beautiful introspection, but that can maybe look, it can for some people look like depression or one of my favorite friends and teachers calls it analysis paralysis, where she's like, are you just going to move in and chew on it forever? Or are you going to do something with it? You know, like, at what point is it useful? And at what point is it, okay, I'm going to come up and out. And so I love that you said that we can always seize even a gentle uplift to serve others and ultimately ourselves, that we don't have to be at the mercy of the spiral. Either, even though there's a lot of really rich, beautiful information in that spiral. It's, you know, tapering it, timing it, especially when we got to go, hey, if it's in a room of middle school students or in the room with our family or, you know, in a room with our boss, you name it. Yeah, I just love that example. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thanks.
As we... You know, kind of on that note, but in general, I don't want to walk away without asking you how you use, you know, in music creation, how you use music listening, music teaching for your overall emotional well-being. Like, if there's anything that you would recommend or that we've left out for folks too, that that maybe it's because they're burgeoning artists themselves and they are scared to write that song or to go sing other than in the shower, you know, or they just need a new good recommendation for their playlist. How else do you use music as a tool that you feel like needs to be shared?
Yeah, well, I really believe that everyone is an artist, at least in some way. So if it's not musically or artistically with the physical painting or anything like that, I think everyone's got the ability to tap into some creativity. And so I think just people in my life, like family members that have their own creative process at their work, but it's nothing to do with what someone would say it being artistic, you know. But then I think there's some people that I know that have maybe a harder time kind of connecting with that. So, you know, what I'd say, which is important for me, is just to spend some time just processing. Especially if something is hard, or, you know, spend some time in silence. And usually an answer kind of comes like, okay, the next step that I need to do is with this. And that's normally when lyric ideas come to me, when music ideas come to me. And I've just learned to trust that. And I think at this point, since I've just written a lot of songs and worked with some people that I really love working with, and the cellist that I play with is really fantastic. Oh, and
yes,
I've been recording this new song called Breathe with one of my friends, Ben, which is turning out to be just one of the most fun recording processes I've ever had. And it just is affirming, you know, when you talk to them about the songs, we work on it. And it's a long journey, but you know, just spending some time on that, is really, I just think really important, you know, to kind of tap into whatever that means for you. And I think everyone needs a healthy outlet to process those things. So yeah, I don't know. I think that's kind of the overarching thing that at least I can think of right now. So
no, I love that. Well, and I heard a lot in there. I heard, you know, like the time to it, to, you know, time to devote to the practice, whatever that looks like. I heard time to get silent so you can hear the guidance. And you bet throughout your whole conversation is this lovely reflection of non-judgment too, about whatever the process looks like.
Yeah.
And you have, you're so great at cultivating music community. That you find your peers and you find people that you love creating with too, that, that we all get to benefit from, because then we get to hear your music together. Like any conversation I have with you, you reference both yoga and music peers and people that inspire you, in a way that, I see really feeds your practice.
Yeah, in, for sure.
You know, both areas so much. So it's just fun and delightful to see it all come together for you too.
Yeah,
and
thanks.
Yeah, because you're on the authentic path, my friend. And that's what it, we never know what it's all going to look like. It's amazing.
I know.
So yeah. Where can people find you next? I can't wait to hear this next song, by the way. If you want to, please, you know, tell people where to go to find you and what albums they might want to look for, if you want to put some names out there.
Sure.
And so if they're searching in Spotify or anything like that, where can we find you?
Sure. So my solo stuff is just under my name. So it's Matt Bingham. And I do have 5 albums online. So on Spotify and Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon, all that stuff. So if you search my name, it should come up. And nice. In Color is the most recent album that I put out. It's all acoustic. I worked with, again, my friend Andrew, who plays cello. There was a string quartet on some of the songs on the album. And that was really kind of a turning point for me, because I had used some electronic instruments, electric guitars and stuff, which I still love and I'm still using on my newer songs. But that was just an all acoustic album, pretty influenced by a lot of the songs that I'd been playing for my yoga classes. But even if you don't do yoga, I think you'd still enjoy, if you like
that
singer-songwriter kind of sound. And then The Light Meeting is the cello and guitar duo instrumental music that I do play with Andrew, and it's an almost 80-minute album. It's called Music in the Calm Before. And we recorded all that stuff either at Andrew's place or at my place, just our home studios. And it's been really amazing. You know, Insight Timers has really been kind to us. We've got a lot of people from all over the world listening to us, which has been just fantastic. And a lot of people just listening to it and using it for their meditation practice and just taking a walk around their neighborhood, and just people writing in. That's been so, so awesome to hear that. So, but yeah, so those are the two kind of main things. And but if you check out, you know, either of those, and, but you know, with The Light Meeting too, I hope you can use it for the same kind of thing. So
that's
really the intent behind that.
Lovely.
Yeah. Thanks.
Hey, and I can't, for, if any yoga teachers are listening out there, I cannot recommend better background music for your classes.
Yeah. Thank you.
The Light Meeting or Matt's classes. Or if you're, you know, trying to get into your own home practice and you want to mix it up, or you need a really good song to kind of take you into a meditative state, it's any of your music, including The Light Meeting, is lovely for that. And some of it is just sweet, beautiful lyrics that, you know, that are also just beautiful storytelling, you know, that my partner and I love too, that remind us of some of our sweet time. There's just something so relatable. And I think that's the mark of really beautiful music, right? Is that you birth this, and it could be a story from your own life, and then it takes on its own whole life for whoever the listener is. And your music has done that in our house. And so I am always grateful.
Yeah, thanks,
for that, because that goes on. Yeah. So thanks so much, Matt. Anything else you would leave folks with?
I was just going to mention too. So, you know, that song Breathe, I think I should mention too. Breathe is a song that I'm really proud of, and that will be out in the next couple months. And then I'm just going to release some singles for this new album, and then I'm going to put the whole thing together. So if you're listening, and following me, you know, on whatever format, that stuff should start to pop up, you know, kind of month after month. And, But yeah, I'm just really excited about that song. And it's definitely influenced by just the simple concept of breathing and how profound that can be.
I hope,
I'm just excited because I'm in that creative space right now and ready for people to hear it. But I think, and that's it, you know, and just bringing it back to the breath, I think is a good way to think about being present. So.
When you're singing, when you're listening, all of it, that's it.
Indeed.
That's the beautiful wisdom. I'm going to leave it there. Yeah. And thank you. Thank you so much, Matt, for,
sure. Well, thank you again
for being with us. Yeah. And yeah, please check out Matt's music and check out the next podcast, because you might even see, you know, who knows what we're going to see next coming up from Matt. So follow up this podcast listening by finding him. Get some tunes on. All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. And we'll tune in next week. Thank you so much, Matt.
Thank you, Shannon.
Well, everyone, thank you so much for being with us, with me and Matt, as we had our sweet chat weaving that yoga and music together. I really hope it brought you some empathy, some perspective, and some ideas about what you can put next on your playlist to either raise your mood or help you get a little more contemplative when you need things to get quiet. If you need those extra tools, don't forget to go to innerpeacerising.com, including our new 2-month fast track Love in the Mirror course. Just 8 weeks of introspection and relationship support. So please check that out at innerpeacerising.com. Until then, until next time, thank you for being with us. Let's all keep remembering that peace that's possible. It's right here in our next breath. I'll remember it with you. This is Shannon Bodie and Love in the Mirror. Have a great day, everyone.